It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, Wisconsin is well known for its conservation history. We talk with an historian who says the Walker administration is reversing the gains of the state's legendary conservationists.
First, President Trump and his children have been at the center of controversy this week. The president's son, Donald Trump Jr., recently released emails between himself and British music publicist Robert Goldstone. In the emails, Goldstone said a Russian official could give the Trump campaign disparaging information about Trump's then-opponent, Hillary Clinton.
Goldstone eventually set up a meeting between Donald Trump Jr., other Trump campaign members, and a Kremlin-connected attorney. The emails and the meeting have added another layer of questions to an ongoing investigation on the Trump campaign's ties with Russia. You can share your thoughts on the Trump email controversy now at 800-642-1234 or by posting on the Central Time Facebook page.
Paul Singer is the Washington correspondent for USA Today. He joins us now to recap that story and other big stories in national politics. Paul, welcome back.
How you doing, Rob?
Well, good. Now, the story, the Russia investigation has a lot of different pieces to it. One, did Russia interfere in the U.S. election? People seem to agree yes, and they're figuring out how. But this issue of collusion has been much more of an open question. What do these emails tell us about the whole collusion angle in this ongoing story?
Well, it's a difficult thing to say about whether there was collusion. What the emails show us definitively, and I think this is the first problem for the Trump administration, is that there were meetings between people connected to the Russian government and members of President Trump's, well, then-candidate Trump's campaign, despite their denial that any such meetings had happened. So now we confirm the meeting happened. We also confirm in those emails that it was made very clear in those emails that this is assistance being offered by the Russian government and several people, including the campaign chairman at the time, Paul Manafort, agreed to take the meeting anyway. So it doesn't prove collusion in the sense that, you know, it's not clear from these emails that candidate and team asked for assistance or received direct assistance from the Russians. But it certainly casts a lie to things that the Trump people have been saying about this whole scandal for the past 6 months. They said nothing ever happened. There were no meetings. We didn't meet with the Russians. That's not true.
Now, Sean Hannity of Fox News asked Donald Trump Jr. about his initial reaction to the email he got. Here's a listen to what he had to say.
This email comes in. What are you thinking?
Honestly, my takeaway when all of this was going on is that someone has information on our opponent. You know, things are going a million miles an hour. You know what it's like to be on a campaign. We just won Indiana, but we're talking about a contested convention. Things are going a million miles an hour again. And, hey, wait a minute. I've heard about all these things, but maybe this is something. I should hear him out.
That's been a defense here. Hey, this is just a campaign looking for information about their opponents. Other people saying when an agent of a foreign power comes to you with this kind of information, you go to the FBI. Can you talk about some of the range of response we've seen to this just in the last day, I guess, Paul?
Well, everybody does opposition research. Donald Trump Jr. is correct that there is nothing unusual about a campaign getting information from all kinds of sources that suggests something nefarious about the opponent. The trouble with this one is, A, that opposition research usually goes on with a contractor or a consultant who is an expert in this kind of material. They usually vet the material themselves. It almost never rises to the level of a meeting with the campaign chairman. In this case, the whole process took like a week to get from, hey, would you like help from the Russian government to beat Hillary Clinton, to, yeah, let's sit down and meet with the campaign chairman. That's not standard. It's not traditional. It's not normal. You could make the case that the Trump campaign, nothing was normal because they just didn't do stuff. They didn't know anything about politics, and that's part of their argument, is we were a bunch of rookies. Maybe, but Paul Manafort was certainly not a rookie. He had run several Republican conventions for Bob Dole before. He knew exactly what the rules of the road were, even if Don Jr. didn't. So it's a really thin nail to hang your defense on that, well, we were just like everybody else looking for information about our opponent.
And then one surprising element of the story is Donald Trump Jr. releasing the email thread himself after finding out that the New York Times had these emails, it looks like. But this, him putting it out there, takes away the whole fake news argument, or the argument that the story here is the leaks, if he put it up there himself.
Yeah, thank God for Twitter. I mean, this is one of those days when you're just like, really? The guy just put out a bunch of these emails that look incredibly incriminating on Twitter for him to read? That was outstanding. I enjoyed every minute of that. It's just, you know, America's gotten weird, Rob. It's just, this is not the way you do these things if you are seriously trying to, you know, manage the response.
Talking to Paul Singer from USA Today and our weekly look at the latest from Washington. Our starting point today, the Donald Trump Jr. Emails and meeting that's getting a lot of attention this week. You can join in with your thoughts on that at 800-642-1234. So, Paul, a lot of people are talking about, well, what unanswered questions do we have? What is next? What are you watching for in this story?
Well, I will say something that will sound sort of contentious, and I don't mean to be, but nobody ever cheats once. I mean, this is sort of my theory of covering members of Congress for years and years and years and years and years, is that people don't cheat once. If they have behavior like this, tends to follow other behavior like this. So what I'm looking for is any suggestion of any similar meeting or any similar outreach or any similar failure by the Trump campaign to respond properly to outreach from the Russians, right? I mean, that's basically the gist, is we now have proof there was a meeting and that the meeting was offered on the pretense of the Russians want to help you get elected. So my question is, how many more of them are there out there that look like this? And if there's more than this one, it's a problem.
And, of course, I guess the gold standard of finding out what's going on would be Robert Mueller's investigation. We, of course, don't know what's happening there. But is there any concept of when or how active this investigation is from Robert Mueller and this team he's been assembling?
When? No. But it's active. I mean, there is no doubt that they are pursuing this stuff. And you're right. We have no idea how much more they have and what else they're looking at. Keep in mind, we believe they may also be looking at some financial transactions that the Trump family has been involved with overseas. We have reason to believe they are looking into whether President Trump crossed some sort of line when he fired James Comey. Was that an obstruction of justice? This is just getting bigger. This investigation continues to show smoke that may be leading to something. And I, you know, I don't know anything about what Robert Mueller is looking at today, but I have every reason to believe they are being very, very thorough and taking this all very seriously.
Let's go to our callers now. Ted is on the line in Monaco. Ted, hi.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you have a guest there who's on who seems really knowledgeable about this. And I'm wondering what his professional opinion would be. Yeah, what would happen if the government spent its time and money investigating rather than this Russia thing, you know, which seems to be a dead end? If they look into alternatives for health care and tax relief to bring, you know, corporate orders, headquarters, these businesses home to America, so there'll be places to work. You know, Russia is always involved in our elections. We're always involved in their elections. Our President Obama even tried to overthrow the leader of Israel, who was on our side, you know, on the civilized side of things of the world. And so I'm wondering what his opinion would be if the government actually did the work of the people instead of always trying to play gotcha with the other side. And, you know, they're investigating something, they found no crime, and yet they're still investigating things. They keep looking for things, and it's just kind of tiresome to the point where everyone just turned the news off and they realize it's congressmen, just a bunch of fakes.
Ted, thanks for the call. A lot there, Paul, but the gist, wasting our time on this dead end, our money and effort is better spent.
Yeah, I actually have that quote in my notebook from every Democrat talking about the Benghazi committee last year. You know, this all of the allegations of, you know, partisan witch hunts are now coming out of the Republicans that were coming out of the Democrats a year and a half ago. It leads me to believe that your view of a witch hunt depends on which party the witches are who are being hunted.
Thanks for the call, Ted. We go next to Scott on the line in Milwaukee. Scott, hi.
Hi. I just I'm listening to the story, and I've heard a little more about the story in the sense that, I mean, it seems like you guys are basically saying half the story, because when this woman even yesterday said that she was not a Russian agent, and she basically said that the reason why she didn't want to come there about any collusion about, well, Hillary Clinton, she basically was going there for changing the Russian law about adoption between Russia and America. And whether that, you know, was the initial way she came in or not, and I'm sure it wasn't. I'm sure she probably said something to get their attention. But the problem I hear is the non-talk about the rest of the story on your station. It's like fake news is not something that's just false, but it's also a omission of the complete story. And the complete end of the story is that they were in the office for a matter of minutes, and they found out she had nothing, and they said, okay, that meeting's over.
Scott, thanks for the call, and that is the story as presented by Donald Trump Jr., Paul.
Right. Well, this is the problem. I think the caller is right. You know, we need to know the rest of the story. Given the fact that Donald Trump Jr.'s description of this meeting changed 3 times in 2 days, and given the fact that he is potentially in some legal jeopardy, I don't believe that his current version of the story should be accepted as the final version of what happened. I'm not saying that's not what happened. For all I know, that is what happened. But I think we need to learn a little bit more before we just decide, well, there was nothing there. Because if nothing else, what we do know in writing was an email saying, hi, the Russian government is trying to help you beat Hillary Clinton. You want to meet? And they said, sure.
Thanks for the call, Scott, at 800-642-1234, as we talk to Paul Singer, Washington correspondent for the USA Today. We're recapping some of the top stories in national politics this week.
And you can tell us what you think at 800-642-1234. You can post on the Central Time Facebook page, what are your reactions to the emails that Donald Trump Jr. released? Do you think they signal collusion with Russia or not? And what do you think of Republican efforts to push back the August recess to keep working on the health care bill? Call in 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Kay Dartcher-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our weekly look at national politics with Paul Singer, Washington correspondent with USA Today.
Tell us what you think of some of the top stories in national politics at 800-642-1234. You can post on the Central Time Facebook page. What were your reactions to President Trump's initial plan of working together with Russian President Vladimir Putin on a cybersecurity unit? Do you think it was a good idea? What were your reactions to Ivanka Trump's role at the G20 summit? Was it her right for her to sit in briefly for the president at a meeting with top global leaders? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Paul, before we move on from the email story, Kimmy in Reedsburg called, couldn't stay on the line. She said our elections were put in jeopardy by the Russian interference. This is, she says, a concern for everyday citizens, and it's a worthwhile use of our resources. Paul, that's the other side of the spectrum from some of the callers we heard from earlier.
Right, and I think that the congressional investigations particularly accept that as the baseline, that as long as they're concerned about the Russian meddling in the elections, no matter who it was intended to benefit or no matter whether there was any kind of collusion with the Trump campaign, those are almost secondary issues. I think as a national security matter, we need to get a better understanding of how much jeopardy was our election system. Was there something going on? And if so, how do we defend ourselves in the future? And I think those are valid questions that no matter what your party is, at least on Capitol Hill, they are very serious about pursuing.
I want to move on to a couple other issues in the news this week, Paul. The Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell delayed the chamber's August recess to work on the health care bill, among other things. What are they hoping to get done in the extra, 2 weeks that they haven't gotten done so far?
Well, apparently they're hoping to destroy my vacation, so that was good news. But beyond that, the theory is that they will finish off the health care bill in the next week, and then after that, they will still have time to work on a defense authorization bill. There is some possibility they will try and solve a debt ceiling or other fiscal matters. There's a lot of stuff still on the plate that the Senate has to get around to, and so the sort of back story here is, or the other possibility here is, what if they fail to pass health care? Are they just buying themselves a couple extra weeks to pass something else that would look like a solution before they go home? Still, we don't know if they're actually going to stay, right? I mean, they might decide at the end of July they finished everything they need to finish and they can go, but they are clearly buying themselves some time to get some achievements under their belt if healthcare fails.
And what is the state of the art in an effort to pass something on healthcare in the Senate?
What time is it? I mean, it's really every hour it changes. All I can tell you at this moment, we have not seen, there have been 10 senators who have been, Republican senators who have been opposing versions of the bill as it's been kicking around. We have not seen anything that changes that math significantly enough to suggest that they've got the votes they need to pass the bill. We're supposed to get another version of the bill tomorrow, that's Thursday. We shall see if that makes a significant change in the way senators are looking at it, but we have heard nothing at this point that implies that there are 50 votes to pass this thing. So something dramatic would have to happen in the next week for them to actually get this thing to the floor.
I understand Senator Ted Cruz had been involved in some of the newest changes, possibly allowing kind of lower budget versions of health care plans to be sold, and
right,
that he was part of the team that was going to be kind of being a Senate whip trying to conjure up votes. Some people said Ted Cruz, whatever you think of him, not necessarily popular even among fellow Senate Republicans.
Right. Yeah, he had been part of the negotiating team at some point earlier, about 6 weeks ago. We'd written a story about the unusual transformation of Ted Cruz into the sort of bastion of compromise. At this point, it's hard to tell. Senator Cruz has said, basically, as you said, he's got this language that would allow states to, or allow insurers to sell insurance plans that don't comply with Obamacare, as long as they are also selling Obamacare compliant plans. Very controversial proposal. Senator Cruz has said basically he would support the bill if his language is in the bill. He doesn't want to have to bring it to the floor as an amendment because he doesn't think it'll pass. So again, until we see exactly what the text is, we're not sure who's supporting which provisions in the bill. And, like I said, we don't know what the amendment process might be and how they might be able to add stuff.
So one national news story, Paul, that probably went in at the top of our list since last week, President Trump met President Putin, and they talked about a lot of things, Syria and cybersecurity. And President Trump made a push for, and he tweeted about this, a cybersecurity unit working with Russia. And that was just in a tweet, but that got a lot of reaction when he tweeted that out. Can you talk about that?
Well, it was only a tweet until the Secretary of State then came out and explained further that we're putting together this task force with Russia to work on cybersecurity, which everybody described as the hen house security effort we are taking on with the fox. And it was what made it even weirder is that a couple of days later, after a lot of bipartisan criticism, Donald Trump tweeted that just because we're talking about this kind of a task force with Mr. Putin doesn't mean we can do it. We can't. So nobody's really clear what they have in mind. It was just odd. The whole thing was just odd. And honestly, I cannot tell you at this point whether they have any intention of putting together such a committee or not.
And Republican Senator Lindsey Graham had a strong reaction. Here he is on Meet the Press.
It's not the dumbest idea I've ever heard, but it's pretty close. He gave a really good speech in Poland, President Trump did, and he had what I think is a disastrous meeting with President Putin. 2 hours and 15 minutes of meetings. Tillerson and Trump are ready to forgive and forget when it comes to cyber attacks on the American election of 2016.
So I know it's not really what people are talking about anymore, but reactions in Washington to the Trump-Putin meeting, Paul.
You know, and the problem with this is exactly what Senator Graham refers to, and that is that you lose the fact that the President of the United States went to Poland and gave a very dramatic speech about the importance of American power and how he was planning to, you know, support the alliances, but there's going to be a new sheriff in town, basically. You know, that was an important speech for the President, and it was quickly trampled over by all of this. You know, honestly, in Washington, Trump-Putin meetings, et cetera, have all been drowned out by these emails. Trump-Russia is taking the wind out of the entire agenda at the moment, and it's just going to be that way for a little while until the next shoe drops.
Another story that came out of the trip to Europe, Ivanka Trump sitting at the table for President Trump briefly in an important meeting. We have a caller, Peter in La Crosse, on that. Peter, hi.
Hi.
What did you think about that?
Well, my analogy for that would be, would a CEO of a corporation, a hospital, or whatever company might be, have a serious business meeting with other companies, allow his daughter to sit in? Here's supposedly the leader of the free world in the United States allowing his daughter sit in on a conference with, that to me, it doesn't make any sense.
Peter, thanks for the call. Paul, your thoughts on that one?
You know, Ivanka's not the average daughter. She is a senior advisor to the President of the United States, and you can make the argument about, you know, nepotism and should he be relying on his family, whatever. All of those are perfectly fair conversations to have. But once you sort of get past the notion of that question, what you are really asking is, should a special assistant to the president sit in his seat for a period of time during those meetings? Maybe not. But I'm not particularly blown away by it. It's unconventional. But again, the whole Trump presidency is unconventional, so I'm not sure that, I'm going to call the appropriations police or whatever you'd call them, who are supposed to look over the manners of people at these meetings.
We'll leave it there for now, Paul. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rob. Have a great one.
That's Paul Singer, Washington correspondent for USA Today. He joined us for our weekly look at the top stories in national politics.